So welcome everybody to this Wednesday night meditation. My name's Sandra Henville and I coordinate the care group here at the BSWA. And before we get started with our meditation and talk tonight, I'd just like to let you know that the care line is open in the background. So every Wednesday night, we run these little sessions with a collection of different lay teachers from the Buddhist community. And part of the offering of the care group is not only these beautiful Wednesday night gatherings where we come together as friends, we meditate, we listen to a talk, and we enjoy tea and fellowship afterwards, but we also have a care line that operates in a little house behind us. So tonight's topic is going to be five remembrances. And it can be a little bit of a heavy topic, but it need not be. And I'd invite you, like if something comes up during the talk or during the meditation, or you feel like you'd like to be heard, you would like to talk to someone, then the care line is operating. And I'll read out the numbers just in case you can't see them at the bottom of the screen. So the numbers is +61, the country code, and then 8 6270 4671. And you can also use your phone, use the WhatsApp app, and it makes it a little bit cheaper. And the number is +61 493 056 327. So please, there is a beautiful thing in being able to talk and be heard and be listened to in a kind and caring and non-judgmental way. So if you'd like to use the service, then by all means, please do. So tonight's talk, five remembrances for modern times. And what I like to do with these talks, I just love to look at these old teachings and bring them into the sunshine, bring them into modern times. So as we start, here we are meeting here again. But for what? To remember, to forget, maybe to redeem. And I'd like to start off with a beautiful passage by Thich Nhat Hanh. Here's this beautiful teaching he calls A Path to Nowhere. And he says, "My path is the path of stopping, the path of enjoying the present moment. It is a path where every step brings me back to my true home. It is a path that leads nowhere. I am on my way home. I arrive at every step." This is the path to nowhere, but here in this present moment. So when we stop in presence, this is supposed to lead us towards a deeper truth. But what can this mean when things are just so changeable, so impermanent, always arising and passing, especially in these modern times? And I don't know about you, but at my workplace, they have this TV going in the common area, and it's the 24/7 news cycle. And I feel shocked every time I go to get a cup of tea. There's some headline. It just seems the earth has tilted a bit. And these are crazy times, always changing. So if we take it back to the Buddha's time, let's go back to the very beginning. So the traditional legend of the Buddha's quest for enlightenment tells us that throughout his youth, young Prince Siddhartha lived in complete ignorance of most of the elementary facts of human life. His father, anxious to protect his sensitive son from exposure to suffering, kept him an unwitting captive, incarcerated in the splendour of his palace. That might be a nice place to be, the splendour of the palace. And the prince did not even entertain the faintest suspicion that life could offer anything other than an endless succession of pleasures. He had everything at his fingertips. And as Buddhists, we are well acquainted with that fateful day that curiosity led him out beyond the palace walls, where he encountered the four divine messengers, the first three being the old man, the sick man, and the corpse. And the fourth, a wandering ascetic. So the first three, the old man, the sick man, and the corpse, taught him the truths of old age, illness, and death. The wandering ascetic, the fourth, revealed to him the existence of a path whereby all suffering could be fully transcended. And that's where the Four Noble Truths were born. I want to fast forward a few centuries and start with this paragraph I was introduced to by Joan Didion in her collection of essays, Slouching Towards Bethlehem. We forget all too soon the things we thought we could never forget. We forget the loves and the betrayals alike. Forget what we whispered, what we screamed. Forget who we were. I've already lost touch with a couple of people I used to be. And where Joan got her title, Slouching Towards Bethlehem, from was Yeats' poem, The Second Coming. And she was writing about the 60s counterculture in San Francisco. It's sort of purported to be this utopian existence. But she too breaks down the walls of this existence, looking out to depict a picture of disorder and societal fragmentation, or as Yeats put it in his famous poem, The Second Coming, things fall apart, the centre cannot hold. And the other funny thing that Joan says, she says, yeah, I've lost touch with a few people I used to be, but I believe it's always worth staying on nodding terms with those past people. They may pop up again. So even more recent, fast forward again, I was recently reading the Red Hand Files, a selection of questions and answers with the artist Nick Cave. And this woman, Sarah from London, wrote in and asked, how do you find yourself again when you feel like you've strayed so far from who you used to be? Reading this as a Buddhist, I thought Nick's answer was quite insightful. And this is what he wrote back. He said, the person you think you used to be is gone and is never coming back. The idealized impression of your past self that your present self competes with is a mirage. Every moment you live is a rapid and shocking abandonment of the last version of yourself. You are forever straying from the person you used to be. You are an autonomous entity coursing through time, moored only to the eternal now. So we should not attempt to return to a past that no longer exists or seize upon a future that is forever beyond our reach, but should instead travel along our own inner axis, a more meaningful part of our present selves. We may feel sadness for what we have lost to the past, our freedom, our vigour, our values, our playfulness, our openness to life. But regrets can be a wonderful indicator of how to improve the current condition of our souls. Rather than allowing these regrets to swallow us up, we can let them identify our present needs. We can call back these lost parts of ourselves. and live them in a wiser, more experienced way, instead of wasting precious time in pointless competition with the past. This call to adventure can begin immediately, in the next moment. So like Joan and Nick say, the past notions of what defines us grow old and fade away. The values we held in our youth may be quite different to those we hold now. We've lost touch with a few people we used to be. We've grown older, some of us ravaged by age, some of us a little bit more silver. We may have suffered sicknesses that make us grateful for our years. We may have even had near-death experiences. The four divine messengers are never far away. So as we look at our televisions, swipe our smartphones, let out a Snapchat or Twitter a tweet, not much has changed. The Buddha's messengers are really for the ages. They're still shouting to be heard. This is where we turn to the five remembrances for grounding. And the five remembrances, for those who like to read the suttas, are from the Upajatana Sutta, the subjects for contemplation, and the Anguttara Nikaya, the Book of Fives. And they show how the Buddha takes a very pragmatic approach to addressing this human existence. Of course, suitably seasoned with dukkha, anicca, and ultimately anatta. So it's suffering, impermanence, and non-self. And this is what he says. He says, because these are the five themes that should often be reflected upon, whether one is a woman or a man, lay or ordained. Which five are those? And these are the five. I'm liable to grow old. I'm not exempt to old age. I'm liable to get sick. I'm not exempt from sickness. I'm liable to die. I'm not exempt from death. I must be parted and separated from all I hold dear and beloved. I am the owner of my deeds and heir to my deeds, meaning the owner of your own actions. Deeds are my womb, my relative, and my refuge. I shall be the heir of whatever deeds I do, whether good or bad. So in that sense, he's referring to the notion of karma. So the Buddha explains that the rationale for contemplating the first three facts is to weaken or overcome conceit, mada. So the conceit of youth, the conceit of good health, and the conceit of being alive. And these are not supposed to be depressing things. These are the same awakenings the Buddha experienced when he left the palace and saw aging, sickness, and death. And there's quite a funny passage here. There are sentient beings who, intoxicated with the vanity of youth, do bad things by way of speech, body, and mind. Reviewing this subject often, they entirely give up the vanity of youth, or at least reduce it. So he realized it wasn't a complete win. The fourth contemplation is to weaken or overcome lust. So that was the part about, you know, I must be parted and separated from all I hold dear and beloved. And the fifth is to weaken or overcome irresponsibility embodied in improper acts, speech, and thoughts. So realizing that we're the owner of our actions, we lay our own path. So the idea being that by contemplating these facts, the Noble Eightfold Path, anchored in right understanding, conduct, and effort, is cultivated and the spiritual fetters are abandoned. And he recommends that we reflect on each of these facts in the following manner. So I'm not the only one who's sure to become old, but whatever beings come and go, pass away and re-arise, they're all subject to old age. no escaping. So it's kind of interesting, this use of I am. And I must admit, it's something that I do struggle with a bit. So within this, there is this vexing issue of self, which is often overlooked in the Buddhist texts. It's quite strong in the Avatta teachings, but Buddhism takes a different path. And I feel we need to address this first and foremost, but it's quite difficult. So when you read the Sabbasava Sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha mentions 16 questions which are seen as unwise reflections and lead to attachment to views relating to a self. So I'll just go through these 16 questions. So quite interesting to contemplate. So the first one, what am I? How am I? Am I? Am I not? Did I exist in the past? Did I not exist in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what, did I become what in the past? Shall I exist in the future? Shall I not exist in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what, shall I become what in the future? Whence came this person? Whither will he go? So the Buddha essentially states that it's unwise to be attached to both views of having and perceiving a self and views about not having a self. Any view which sees the self as a permanent, stable, everlasting, unchanging, remaining the same forever and ever, is becoming enmeshed in views, a jungle of views, a wilderness of views, scuffling in views, be agitation or struggle of views, the fetter of views. So he advises not to contemplate self too deeply. Wise reflection is reflection on the Four Noble Truths, born of the four messengers. This is dukkha, dukkha, this is suffering, this is the arising of suffering, dukkha. This is the cessation of suffering, dukkha. This is the path leading to the sensation, to the cessation of dukkha, the way out. Wise reflection, it is said, frees one from the three fetters, which he also calls the troubles that should be got rid of by insight, nay, the false idea of self, skeptical doubt, and attachment to observances and rites. So this is pretty hard yards for a Western mind to understand, especially when it seems every aspect of our life is focused on the development of self. In any bookshop, you'll see it, rows and rows of self-development books. How to build self-esteem, how to build self-mastery, self-knowledge, self-assurance. The cult of self goes on. And it's this point I skip out of Theravadan Buddhism for a second to be reminded of some sayings by Muji. He's a much-loved teacher who brings together Christian, Buddhist and Hindu teachings. And he says, throw everything away, forget about it all. You're learning too much, remembering too much, trying too hard. Relax a little bit and give life a chance to flow in its own way, unassisted by your mind and effort. Stop directing the river's flow. Or put another way, dying to your attachments is a beautiful death because this death releases you into real life. You have to die as a seed to live as a tree. So how do we let go of our attachments, our clingings and cravings, and put these five remembrances into our everyday practice? So we can recite the five remembrances to ourselves in the first person, by stating simply, all that's dear to me, and everyone I love are of a nature to change. In this recognition of suffering and impermanence, old age, sickness, death, this is dukkha, anicca, anatta. It's the start of letting go of the fetters of self, skeptical doubt and attachment. We can then move to say this in the second person. So maybe in our head, as we're looking at our aging parents, maybe we have a friend who's just received a diagnosis. Or we watch children as they're going through all the joys and sorrows of growing up. You might pause and think to yourself, you are of the nature to grow old. You are of the nature to die. You are going to suffer separation and loss. And these are undeniable facts that we can't pretend are anything else. And when we say them, when we acknowledge them, it changes the air in the room. And that's because at this point we realise that together, all of us are this. We are all the joys, we are all the sorrows. We really are all in this together. There's no conceit, there's no lust. And what is interesting is that although these facts may seem gloomy, when we see a newborn baby or we see something so perfect, we wouldn't wish for a moment that that baby not grow up and get old. At that same time, when the child gets older and becomes an adult, we might not see its perfection so clearly. There's a sense of loss. We understand that it's both temporary and complete. And to go back to our friend Joe Didion, we have already lost touch with a couple of people we used to be. So when we meet the messengers, which we all will do, we shouldn't count our blessings that we are not suffering in the same way. These people who are suffering are showing us the condition of our own life. So instead, we say thank you and realise what we are seeing. This is the human condition. It is just who we are. Maybe in the future there is a better you, but for now, as Venerable Ajahn Sumedho says in his teaching on mindfulness, The Path to Deathless, this little book here I picked up years ago, there are conditions in nature which we must recognise and see, not through condemnation, but through understanding them, so we really get to know the movement of our minds, which brings us to Remembrance 5. We are the owners of our actions and the owners of our karma. What we do matters. So take heed of the remembrances and live like it does. And I'd just like to finish with a little poem before we move to the meditation. Always like to just let the words settle and contemplate. And I heard something really interesting the other day when I was listening to another Dharma talk, and I forget who said it, but they were talking about the notion of concentration in meditation as opposed to contemplation. And what they were saying is that when we contemplate, we observe from a place of stillness. It's quite a different feeling. Very different to concentration. So we may concentrate, gradually we build awareness. And from awareness, we gain wisdom, we contemplate. So I want to finish this poem with a poem by Wendell Berry, The Peace of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Just letting those words settle. I rest in the grace of the world and am free. And I'd like to move now into the meditation. We'll see where our hearts take us. So the most important thing about meditation is always to be kind and compassionate to yourself. So take the time to make yourself comfortable. Find a nice posture. You all look very comfortable here. I can see some people are being very kind to themselves with a little cushion under their feet. And if you're sitting in a chair, maybe just put your feet on the ground, nice and flat, so you can feel the earth below you. And if you're sitting, as Ajahn Brahm always says, check in with the body. How are you today? Is there anything I can do to make you just 10% more comfortable? And you can gently close down the eyes. It's always helpful just to turn your gaze downwards, just beyond your nose. It helps slow the movements of mind. And we'll work our way through the four factors of mindfulness, allowing ourselves to become still, to become soft in this beautiful space, this beautiful Dharma hall. Listening to the sounds around us. Feeling the space we occupy in the room, all of us together. It's always helpful to kind of place yourself in the world. So becoming aware of the sounds around us. This perception of sound. And as we gently listen, just allowing the sound to come into our field of awareness. Noticing the way it arises, it exists, and then it changes. So we notice its impermanence, its arising and passing. No holding on, just simply letting the sounds drift in and out. And it's the same with our thoughts. Being human, we'll always be thinking. It's just what we do. The art is to know you're thinking. So just like the sounds, we allow the thoughts to arise. They arise and form like clouds. Then they drift and change, falling away again. So sounds and thoughts just simply moving in and out of our awareness. Anicca, impermanence. Anatta, not self. And feeling the sensations. It's a nice cool night here in Perth. Feeling the sensations of the cool air. After this beautiful sunshiny day. Feeling the sensation of sitting. The sensation of the chair or cushion. The sensation of being connected to the earth. Feeling safe. Feeling held. Feeling connected. Very basic needs. Common to us all. And starting to listen deeply to the sound of your own breathing. So that first factor of mindfulness, mindfulness of body, being aware that we're sitting. Being aware of the body of the breath. Feeling the gentle rise of the chest. Rising and falling. You might put one hand on your heart and the other on your belly. Just gently feeling the breath as it enters through the nostrils, down into the chest, filling up the lungs. And feeling the movements of the belly. It's like you're breathing in awareness, breathing out love. Sense of compassion and kindness. Compassion and kindness towards ourselves, towards those around us. And resting the hands down again. Breathing in, breathing out. Nowhere to be. nothing to do, just simply being here in the now. Becoming more and more soft, more and more still, knowing that you're sitting, knowing that you're breathing, seeing things just as they are. And as we sit here together quietly, I just invite you to dive below all the movements of mind and bring your awareness down into the heart space, into the heart mind. Just noticing the flavor of awareness in the heart. As we move into the second factor of mindfulness of feelings and sensations. Taking your time, accepting whatever feelings and sensations, whatever emotions may be there, just the way they are. Like you're greeting a friend. We know that we grow old. We know that we may not always be well. And we know one day will pass. Just notice the emotion, the feeling. Notice the changeable nature, the impermanence. Of these feelings and sensations. Know that we're the heir to our actions. Accepting just the way, seeing things just the way they are. Now we'll bring our awareness out a little bit. It's feeling into the body, into the shoulders. Allowing the breath, maybe imagining, visualizing the breath, traveling into the shoulders, like a healing balm, releasing any points of tightness or tension. So we go deep, and then we expand out a little bit. Always with that notion of kindness and compassion. Softening the eyes and the mouth and jaws. Maybe bringing your mouth into a little smile, a benevolent smile, a kind smile. A smile of love. Letting the arms relax. The upper arms, the elbows, the lower arms, the hands. Palms nice and open. Feeling the in-breath and the out-breath. Breathing in awareness. Letting go with the out-breath. And sometimes it's nice just to put your fingers on the floor. And sitting in this Dharma hall is a beautiful energy. As we're held in this space. You might imagine yourself letting go as though every out-breath is traveling down through your fingers into the earth, allowing you to let go of all those things that no longer serve you. No holding on. So breathing in awareness, letting go with kindness and compassion. And continuing out. Mindfulness of the body, a mindfulness of feelings and sensations, bringing your awareness down into the tummy. Feeling into the belly. Belly. The home of our gut reactions. And again, just noticing any feelings or sensations that might arise in the belly. and again accepting them just the way they are. Feeling a sense of groundedness. So feeling the hips, the buttocks on the chair, the base of the spine. Spine lovely and soft. And again, just directing the breath down into the hips, into the pelvis. Relaxing. And again, we contemplate. We know we'll grow old. We will know sickness. One day we'll know death. We know things arise and pass. We know we're the heir of our own deeds. And again, just greeting whatever feelings may arise. The sense of kindness and compassion. The sense of friendliness and openness of heart. A softness. And it's as Muji was saying, hard seeds must break and soften. In the way they die, to bring forth new life. To grow into tall trees. Becoming aware of sitting, of breathing, seeing things just as they are. Feeling into the legs, the knees, ankles and feet. sitting like a tall tree. Connected to the earth. With a feeling of safety, feeling of being held. Of being connected to each other, connected to the earth. Whole body breathing. Whole body alive. Alive in presence. Breathing in awareness. Breathing out love, kindness, compassion. Timeless, boundless. And as we come to the close to the end of the meditation, becoming aware of the third factor of mindfulness, mindfulness of the mind. The heart mind. Contemplating from this place of stillness, observing, witnessing, as we come into the fourth factor of mindfulness. Mindfulness of the Dharma, our truth. As we bring our meditation to a close, I just invite you to bring your hands to your heart. Say a gentle thank you to yourself for taking this time to practice, to find your place of stillness. And taking a moment, if it feels right, to dedicate your practice to someone in need of a bit of kindness, a bit of care right now. Gently opening the eyes, turning to the people next to you and saying thank you to them too. Thank you everybody for meditating together this evening. Thank you. Wow, it's such a beautiful feeling in this Dharma hall. So just to finish up, it's right on 8 o'clock. So I'm happy to take any questions that you might have. Always feels kind of odd calling for questions right after a beautiful, peaceful meditation. But any questions, or I've cooked some food and got some herbs to make tea here. So if you'd like to join us over in the kitchen area, we can chat together and get to know each other a bit more. And for those at home, the care line is still open. I think the number's still at the bottom. And I'll just read it out for people, because I know some people might have a little trouble seeing the numbers, but for the phone line, +61 8 6270 4671. And the WhatsApp, +61 493 056 327. I have a friend at work who's sight impaired, and he said he always appreciates it when people read out the numbers, because the subtitle text on YouTube can pick it up for him. So, yeah. So did anyone have any questions? Or? Okay, then we'll leave it there. And I'll invite you all to come over and join us for tea, for eats. My husband Mitch has made a lovely chocolate fudge. I've made a quiche. And we can sit together. So thank you so much. I'll see you next time.